Okay.
So our next speaker this morning is Kenneth White, director and co-founder of Open Crypto Audit Project. He's going to be giving us a talk on the OpenSSL 1.1 audit, and here we are.
Hi, everyone. All right. So I'm Ken White. Been working with the OpenSSL team for, I guess, about 2 years now. So I know we don't have a super long time, but thought I'd give a brief background of the project, kind of give folks an update on where we are, and then look at the roadmap kind of going forward. There we go. So if you're not familiar, the Open Crypto Audit Project, what is that? Well, we were the folks that were originally formed to do the community-funded audit around TrueCrypt, if you're familiar with that. Within a month or two of the project taking off, we realized that we needed to have sort of more, a larger structure and, proper fundamentals. So we operate now as a public interest 501c3 seeking organization. If you've ever dealt with IRS non-status applications, you have my deepest sympathy. So our technical advisor board, the board of directors is myself, Matt Green from Hopkins, Marcia Hoffman, formerly special counsel to EFF. You might want to take a look. We have the bios of all the folks on our advisory team at opencryptoaudit.org. I think we've got links to it later in the presentation. So our mission is around open source and education, particularly security engineering aspects and cryptography engineering aspects of open source software. And the project we've been working on for the last 2 years is the OpenSSL project for the Linux Foundation's Core Infrastructure Initiative, on behalf of Linux Foundation, I should say. All right, so why OpenSSL? I think a lot of folks in the room probably know this very well, but just in case, because it is everywhere. Servers, desktops, mobile, middleware, web services, service logic bus, OS updates, apt, get, yum, RPM, every mail client that's on the Linux and Unix side has likely dependencies on this, and libcurl. Libcurl I make special mention because I think most people, even those who may be really technically proficient in the Linux and Unix ecosystems, may not quite appreciate how embedded libcurl is in the operating system. And my numbers were off slightly. I didn't realize that the FIPS package was up to 170. So that's, there's an enormous number of implementations out there. But especially in an enterprise. I have conversations with people sometimes that do heavy work, system administrators and CIOs that have a heavy presence with, F5 load balancers and, large-scale network gear. And occasionally we'll have these conversations where there's just a complete disconnect because I get this about, open source software. Yeah, I guess it has its place, but, we're really an enterprise shop. many of the major VPN clients have about menus like this that point out that OpenSSL is part of the infrastructure. When Heartbleed first broke, one of the large, I'll say top three networking equipment companies took 10 days, just to enumerate all the products they had that had OpenSSL dependencies in it. And libcurl as well. Libcurl is, I've really come to appreciate Daniel and the project's team on this because if you're not familiar, one of the things that libcurl does is it has, I won't say an agnostic, but it has an abstraction layer for the TLS library. And so the work that Daniel's put into that is just remarkable, and I think that's really underappreciated. So let's talk about the audit. It was commissioned by the Linux Foundation in around May of 2014. It's a really ambitious scope. If folks have ever sort of looked under the covers at the code that's involved, there's a lot to it. I mean, we worked with people who do formal methods and, professional you know, validation teams and reverse engineering teams, and to the person, the comments were, this is, you know, this is some of the most complex make systems, and it's some of the most complex implemented code they'd seen. So we have a few sort of high-level goals, and I'll talk about those. But one of the things we wanted to do is we didn't want to have sort of just a one-off audit, you know, with some 20-page PDF that people read and sort of put on the shelf. What we really hoped to do was develop some tools, or at least if other tools existed, help accommodate sort of a test harness for OpenSSL that could be applied to other TLS libraries. There's also some public data set, well, some semi-public data sets that we found enormously useful. I think there's just not a lot of awareness out there in the community. So, contrary to popular belief, OpenSSL is not C, strictly. It's hugely Perl. It's hugely assembler targeted to individual CPUs. There's shell scripts. There's C++ as well. The Perl generates C files and generates assembler macros. And so those are enormously difficult. Even just getting line counts of code was one of our first challenges. So as of the snapshot, about this time last year, that the master branch had about 500,000 lines of code. We decided that it made sense to sort of break the project into two phases. When the Linux Foundation offered to support OpenSSL with a couple of full-time fellowships, and then there was some other support given to OpenBSD for their LibreSSL efforts, and as well as some tooling and other partners. If you're not familiar with the Core Infrastructure Initiative, I think it was originally around 12 or so organizations, but this is, you know, Microsoft and Google, Juniper, Huawei, Cisco, HP. I mean, a lot of vendors that span from sort of traditional firmware space all the way to, higher levels on the stack. But at the time we were looking at this sort of post-Heartbleed, one of the things that was happening is there was a major effort to kind of reevaluate the code base in OpenSSL. And the developers had already started the beginnings of a rewrite. And what we would come to sort of appreciate in the span of 2 years is that refactoring, I think, is sort of significantly understated. It was a major refactor of the code. Every line of code in the entire code base was touched. So we decided to split things into two parts, as you all well know, in the case of Heartbleed and many, many other issues that come out on a large scale that are sort of labeled by the media as, you know, encryption or crypto issues. They're not. They're basic software constructions, right? And so there's no sort of perfect clean way to cut it, but we decided, all right, well, let's look at some of the core components from just a software perspective, and then in terms of the cryptanalysis, we'll do that as, you know, in kind of a different piece. If you're not familiar with the term FrankenCert, there was a team, I think, led by folks at the University of Texas Austin and Stanford, that took these millions of publicly available certificates, RSA certs, DSC certs, and abuse them in every way possible with dependencies and recursion and violating encoding standards and so forth. And what they found is that pretty much all the TLS libraries had issues. Surprisingly, in the original FrankenCert research, OpenSSL actually came out better than many. I mean, one of the things you see, and this was sort of a recurring theme in the work that we did, was there are some really odd corner cases that, you know, there's sort of, Matt Green's put it in this way, that a lot of what you see in the bumps of OpenSSL is sort of scar tissue from, you know, having been attacked for, EV side channels and all these sorts of things. So the TLS state machine was a key piece that was rewritten. The PKI constructions around the EVP modules were rewritten. The message digest and hash functions, the structures that both parse those and manipulate those, there was significant rework done. We had originally intended to spend a fair amount of time on the more modern primitives, the SHA-2 and the, that should be GCM, sorry, but when CHA-CHA-20 and Poly 1305 were dropped, it was sort of late into the project, so we'll come back to that in a second. This is an enormous code base. We have a fixed amount of engineering hours and time, and so sort of where you focus, where you spend the energy on, because it's true that OpenSSL runs on VACs and, Windows, 95 and sort of all these older alpha products and things. But the consensus was that, well, let's look at the generic constructions as much as we can, but if, in terms of a pure priority, let's try to focus more on, the current TLS 1.1 and 1.2 and what's coming into 1.3, as well as the more mature pieces of the ABI hooks that have been developed for 1.1, which are, in some cases, completely new interfaces. And then also spend a lot of time focusing on the ASN and X509 parsing. OpenSSL is used for lots and lots of different kinds of software, including SMIME, DTLS, every ancient version of SSL you can imagine. As Tim may have pointed out, SSL 3 has been deprecated by default in the new release. The other thing, too, that's interesting, so, you hear sometimes about, people are kind of critical that OpenSSL kind of has a corner of the market, so to speak, in terms of a part of the crypto library that people depend on. It turns out there's even some more interesting stories. So the actual constructions, the actual finite field tables and matrix transformations, et cetera, for some of the core crypto primitives, even in, OCaml libraries and things, you'll see the same base. And so one of the things we'd love to do potentially in the phase three is do a proper academic cryptanalysis on those, the true core primitive layers. So just sort of breaking OpenSSL as a software package apart, these are kind of the top level pieces. C doesn't accommodate integer logic in the way of, in terms of the scale that you need for certificate parsing and large integer math, so the big num library is a huge piece of it. We spent time doing both manual inspection as well as a fair amount of tooling. The BIOS, the print and formatting pieces is another key piece. As I said, the PM and parsing. right, and then the TLS stack, which was got a lot of energy on this. So here's some of the major findings. And by the way, so our formal report's coming out in the next 2 weeks or so. This is, we've worked really closely throughout the project with OpenSSL team, but there are a number of sort of blind alleys that we would go down where it looked like issues had, potential vulnerabilities, but then because of where they occurred in parsing or other memory structures that may be in sort of, opaque to independent tooling were, turned out not to be as potentially hazardous as we thought. So I've, in some cases, made these a little bit vague, but again, this is on the 1.1 code base, not the earlier builds, and so I don't think there's anything too sensitive here, but to give you a sense of things. We did, as one would expect with C code, find some overflows, memory leaks, some integer operations that could potentially have issues. The biggest one from our auditor's perspective, and if I didn't mention this, the NCC group, the crypto services, if you're familiar with Montesano or ISAC, that's a lot of their core engineers came from that group, were the ones leading on the technical appraisal. So there, in terms of higher priority, there did seem to be an issue with padding check-in in SSL 3, but as I said, it's mitigated because it's not enabled by default in the new version. There is an awful lot of code around constant timing and ensuring that the defaults make sense, you know, for side channel attacks that way. One of the things that that we found is that there are places in Handshake protocol where if you had if you were able to sort of break through structures that that encapsulate some of these functions, on a low level you could create a crash, you could create an overwrite, but in fact the way that the logical path of some of these things that operate, it turns out not to be exploitable. So on the fuzzing side, as I said, we started with around 80 million certificates. Those were reduced down to about 20 million. If you're familiar with the American Fuzzy Lob AFL library, fantastic piece of code. Part of our audit and sort of contemporaneously other people were exercising this pass against OpenSSL 102 and found some interesting things. There were about, you know, 270, 280 or so certificates that were real world certs that had very bizarre dependencies and you know, circular reasoning and things that, you know, that we included to look at it. So this was over 500 hours worth of fuzzing we directed towards the PEM and X509 functions to sort of, you know, enumerate those potential paths. Highly complex code. In the X509 fuzzing, we didn't see crashes or anything interesting, which is really kind of a testament because that is some of the most hardened parsing code that our auditors have seen in some time. We did find a few instances in the DER encoding, the fuzzing results, where the server went really, really slow, but we're still sort of, that's one of the last pieces we're looking at before the final recommendations come out. And then a number of tools and stubs were developed to exercise these structures. Right. Sort of scoot through these pretty quickly. We did look at a lot of sort of the classic format string attacks or vulnerabilities, and didn't see a whole lot there. In the big num operations, we were not able to crash through the test harnesses that were developed. In phase two, so there was a potential code execution in a stack buffer overflow, but as I mentioned earlier, it's deprecated. And in this narrow function, it was through a pre-shared key authentication and only under SSL v3 records. Right, so we're still sort of looking at low impact, low severity, low likelihood, and high difficulty issues. But in general, given the complexity of the code and given the areas where it's hardened, we found surprisingly few, high or medium issue severity issues. Sorry, there were a couple of cases where I believe on Windows the earlier buffers that contained important secrets weren't being wiped properly, but we weren't able to find a way to exploit, and neither were the auditors. So late into the process, the Cha-Cha 20 and Poly 1305 were implemented. We'd like to take another look at that. We hope other folks will as well. A lot of that code is from the Google group, you know, Adam Langley and company, who have, you know, a really stellar reputation in terms of software engineering and writing secure code. But it needs a close look, because as a practical matter, and I'll talk about this in just a second, the real-world implementations of web servers, web services, application servers, you know, these things are still very much bleeding edge. I mean, if you look at the, you know, Ubuntu and Red Hat and Amazon Linux implementations, they can be included, they can be compiled, but as a practical matter, the vast majority of web service implementations are sort of the more classic, you know, the SHA-2 and AES constructions. There is a desperate need for documentation around the new opacity that's been created with the EBP structure. So there is legions of existing posts and blogs and Stack Overflow articles and how-tos where direct calls are made, direct structure manipulations made to these things, even to do just a simple, like an MD5 digest. That goes away. This new abstraction layer is very powerful, but when you talk to folks like Dan on the libcurl project, it did require a fair amount of reworking on the existing abstraction layers. As Tim mentioned, the FIPS 2.0 module, there in the initial release for OpenSSL 1.1, it will not be FIPS compatible out of the box. And then there's a fair amount of work happening on kind of the practical side in terms of post-logjam and with some of the other major attacks that have come out in sort of the last year. But I want to take a second to look at this. So there are just myriad constructions that can be made for the Cypher suites, the authenticated TLS exchanges and so forth. But to the extent that people are using traditional gear like Nginx, like Apache, to some extent, the newer languages like Go and Rust that provide some of these constructions, this is the reality in 2016 for the majority of consumers of web services, for the majority of browsers, for the majority of desktops. And even then, I think ChaCha and GCM is, ChaCha and Poly are kind of optimistic. What Logjam showed us is that there's an awful lot of just basic configuration for the TLS layer that people get wrong. I did a check the other day, if you know the group up in the SSL Labs from Qolsys. Is it the Department of Commerce, I think, or Department of Industry? But anyway, the group that served with you know, making recommendations on export controls, that's got one of the lowest grade SSL scores I've ever seen. I mean, it's literally running, you know, DES, Cypher suites, MD5, RC4. You know, as the on the U.S. side, as the federal government goes through this major initiative this year of sort of pushing all public websites to HTTPS only and implementing some of the more modern Cypher suites and constructions, we're going to see hopefully less of that. But there was an enormous amount of work done to show that people have these, you know, wildly over-accommodating endpoints with grossly misconfigured configurations and, you know, public-facing structures that I think is probably worth the conversation. Our challenges in many ways in the security world are the practical, the system administration implementations, the good practices. I know Mozilla and some other folks have put together kind of best practice guides, but the reality is there's an awful lot of work to go to minimize things which, you know, were known vulnerabilities years ago, many, many, many years ago. I know time's short, so yeah. We'll end it there.
I think, unfortunately, we have time for one question.
Okay.
Anyone?
All right. I'll be around afterwards. Yeah. Feel free to chat in the back.
Okay.
Thank you.
So you should be
the upper. Yeah. No, the lower. Yep,
that one. Okay. I don't have your bio sheet handy. How do you? How do you pronounce it?
Jago.
How do I pronounce your name?
Giovanni.
Giovanni.